Blog Talk Radio.
The African House Gun the Book Club. Today we have a special feature. It's the author's spotlight. And my name is Charles Williams. I'm your host, and I'm joined with my lovely wife, Jalavette.
Are you going to tell me to say hi? You know, this new thing is just not working for me.
Okay. We're going to do it. We'll rewind. We'll do it the old way.
Oh, that's all right. It's too late now. The moment is gone. Welcome, everybody, and thank you for joining us tonight. We have a very special edition for you. We are spotlighting authors, in particular, authors from the Chicago area. And we are joined by our most esteemed friend, Nasser Ali, and a couple of other wonderful guests that will share with us about their body of work. You can join us on Facebook at facebook.com/ Beyond the Book, a.k.a. Beyond the Book. So join us there where you can find information about our presentations on our podcast. And in addition to that, you can find information about any authors that we may present on the show, books that we're currently reading for our standard weekly book club meeting. And you can also network with others who are working toward a better day for us all.
Thank you.
Come.
So,
Brother Ali is live.
Yes,
with us.
I am. I'm always tickled by you both. I'm glad to be back again. It's always good to hear your voices.
Thank you. So, please, we love to hear more about the work that you all have done to establish for the Phoenix Village.
Yes. Actually, it just so happens that my mother actually works at the Barack Obama Learning Center in the village of Phoenix, which is south of Chicago proper.
Okay.
And it's a brand new facility. They do have a very nice Facebook page that kind of gave some really good final construction shots before they opened up. And so they kind of decided to have a showcase and a spotlight for our authors, be they, you know, Paleo-American, African-American, whichever, but those that look like us, that we're trying to support ourselves. So I was invited to participate with two additional authors. And so as I began to kind of get an idea of what this was and what it was going to be, I was like, how can I help? And we're like, okay, well, you do this, we'll do that, we'll take care of this, this is where it's going to be. And so we ended up setting it up. I met two fantastic authors. I met the wonderful staff at the Barack Obama Learning Center, and I had the opportunity to meet one of the trustees, and had the wonderful opportunity to meet the mayor and the mayor's wife. So it was really, really a very warm, small, cozy event where it was kind of like family. And right before the event, we were trying to do the marketing, but, you know, we were kind of moving so fast we couldn't stop. So at the event, I spoke to the folks at the library and the trustee and the mayor, and it was agreed that we would do a follow-up for this instead of beforehand. We wanted to do a follow-up afterwards to kind of talk about it. And then he expressed to me that he thought it might be a good idea to do it twice a year instead of once a year.
Okay.
So I was like, you thumbs up on that. What can I do to help, you know? So I'll kind of pause there, and then you guys kind of let me know, you know, where you want to take it from there. But that's kind of how everything got started.
Well, all right. I mean, that sounds very interesting. So the Village of Phoenix had a learning center attached. I understand you do teach courses on about the Paleo American, right?
That is correct. I do have I call them facilitated discussions.
Okay.
Some people call them lectures or classes, and that's fine. It's just terminology. And I'm in the process right now of actually developing some human rights training and certification classes as well for release later this year. So absolutely, I do. Yes.
Great, great. So, I mean, if you tell us more about your, I mean, you've been on our other program, African Conversations, where we discussed the Paleo-American Ad Lib, but we have a lot of new listeners that that may not be as familiar with how your work is sharing or facilitating discussions about the Paleo-American with the human rights in connection with the Learning Center, how the Learning Center would be a conduit for that kind of, enlightenment.
Okay. Well, let me see if I can tie them together for you, Charles. Thank you. Let's see. Well, let me go back a little bit. The phrase Paleo-American, the first part of it, paleo, is a Greek word that means ancient. So the phrase Paleo-American refers to modern humans that are called ancient Americans. They're not called Native Americans.
Right.
And the reason that they're called Paleo-Americans is because their skulls do not look like Native Americans or American Indians. They actually resemble sub-Saharan Africans, and they also resemble Australian Aboriginals. So to give you a general term, these Paleo-Americans look Negroid. It doesn't matter whether you're saying it's from Africa or the Andaman Islands of India or Australia or Papua New Guinea. It doesn't matter. That Negroid shape fits into this description of these ancient Americans that date back all the way back, at least from my research, at least 197,000 years ago, all the way up to not too long ago, like a couple hundred years ago.
Right, basically the oldest human is known as the Negroid, and that is the most ancient human fossil remain located in what we call the Americas. Is that correct? Are we following?
That is absolutely correct. That is absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Yes. And a lot of people, when we use the phrase American history, very rarely does the average person walking down the street picture a Negroid face as the first modern humans to inhabit North, Central, and South America. Very few people make that mental connection, although the research that I've accumulated confirms that all the way back to 1847, it still hasn't made it out to the mainstream yet. Even as recent as 2008, 2009, they're still publishing research that still confirms the same thing they said over 150 years ago. So it once I began to realize this information, I took it upon myself to write my book, and that book is called The Paleo-American, A Primer on Ancient American History. And so I tried to keep it real short and simple, but at the same time, I didn't want to sugarcoat it. So I did use, some scientific terms. Anything you can't get to a dictionary or Wikipedia, it's real straightforward. But it just lays a good scientific foundational basis for totally revisiting what people normally call American history. And so as I began to gather this information and I published the book and I began to have discussions with people, I came to a realization that something needs to be done with this information. It isn't just good for the sake of knowing. And as you know, it's kind of what my mom told me. It's nice that you know. What are you going to do? So I began to research into international human rights, because you're talking about these ancient humans who have been publicized in scientific journals as having become extinct. However, there's confusion about different terms and different timelines, but the facial measurement stays the same. So I kind of question whether or not they really did go extinct or not. And now I'm absolutely certain that they did not.
They just merely assimilated with the group.
Yeah, they assimilated with the American Indians, and they also were forced to crossbred with the African Aboriginals that were brought over as well. So there was definitely an absorption, and during that absorption and that assimilation, they were all Negroids, but just generally referred to as black, Negro, African American, color. And so any of them who were still here probably got mixed in, and their bloodlines and their family histories were totally eradicated to the point where it's not traceable anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So unlike the colonialists who came, they kept records of their family history, whereas those who are Negro do not have that luxury. So what I realized is there are several human rights laws that actually make it very clear, extremely clear, you cannot discriminate against anyone because of their identity if you're trying to require them to base their identity off of their DNA. You cannot do that. A person's identity is more than just their genetic code. It's social ties. It's economic ties. It's ethnic ties. It's spiritual ties. It implies a dimension of freedom. And your identity is more than just, you know, the code that your parents gave you. It's a combination of what's going on around you, your experiences, and everything else. So what I did is I decided, oh, well, you know what? I'm going to step onto this, and I'm going to stand on it. So I officially notified the federal government through the census that as of, I think it's 2010, I have officially identified my race as Paleo-American.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, very interesting things have happened. However, I have met the most wonderful people, and I have had a very interesting journey along this process. And part of this journey has included lectures about my book and the reason that we're meeting here today, which was the author signing at the Village of Phoenix. So all of these things kind of just come up. You know, I just came back from Los Angeles in December. I had a wonderful lecture at the Ifa Temple out there. In November, before that, I was in Nashville, Tennessee, at the Goodwill Center, at the Goodwill Industries location that's brand new out there. So I will say this, people seem to be very open and receptive to human rights. And it doesn't matter whether it's poetry or a children's book or a book about Paleo-Americans. I don't think our people know enough about the difference between civil rights and human rights.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right, human rights. We would say is more civil rights could fall up under that, but your rights as a human being to, I would say, sovereignty and respect, and you know, and be free from subject to humiliation, is something that we should strive to preserve and expand.
Yes, and it is everyone's right and everyone's responsibility to talk about and discuss and advocate and push for human rights. It's everyone's right and everyone's responsibility to do that.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you, brother, for sharing that information. And we'd like to introduce our next author.
The next guest is actually Mrs. Elizabeth Loggins. She is from the Village of Phoenix, and so I want to give her a welcome and give her an opportunity to discuss a little bit about that project with us. Welcome to the show, Ms. Loggins.
Hi, how are you this evening, and thank you for having me.
Wonderful. We're delighted to have you.
Well, in the Village of Phoenix, we've tried for the last 24 years to build our library, so we have a unique library. We have a tri-partnership. It's with South Holland School District 151, the Village of Phoenix, the trustees, and the Phoenix Library Board. So together, those three entities built the Barack Obama Learning Center, and we are very proud of the fact that we are the first building in the United States to have his name.
Okay, the very first.
Yes.
Wow.
Thank you. That's for you know, putting that project together and working so hard to, you know, keep it on track.
It took a few years, but we were the Mrs. Jessica Buckner, who's been our president for the last 24 years. This has definitely been a dream of hers to have a library in the Village of Phoenix, because before we built the library, we had to use the services of Harvey. That was no problem, but nothing is as good as having your own.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Okay, so what are some of the services here at this particular library?
We are a brand new library. We just opened, had our river cutting grand opening October 2012. And we're developing a 4-H program, an adult literacy program, after school homework help, because being connected with the school, there's a lot of teachers that are there that are willing to stay and help the students afterwards. The students have to do research papers, have to do, and then the high school students, they have to do X amount of community service hours to graduate so they can come to the library and help the 7th and 8th graders with their research projects. So we're developing a lot of stuff and a lot of different activities, but the first one we had was the book signing. And I'm really thankful for Ms. Williams, because she knew, of course, our son, and one of the librarians there, she had written a book, and the young man that wrote the children's book was a student, a former student of the mayor. He's a history teacher at Thornton Township High School.
Oh, okay. That's would that be the other gentleman that's joining us today?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be with us next.
Yes.
Wonderful.
So we're very, 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 very new. We're starting our programs, but we've seen a lot of the different organizations, because the adult literacy program will be run through South Suburban College. So it won't cost us anything. We won't have to develop the program. It's already up and running. We just have to get the publicity out to the community and surrounding areas so they can come. The 4-H program, I'm meeting with her sometime next month, which is Friday, to talk to her about getting the 4-H program started. And as I was telling her, too, I said, I didn't think 4-H had anything to do with, you know, urban communities. And she said that is the problem that she's having, is to get information out to urban communities and not just rural communities.
Absolutely.
Said,
well,
the village is it will be more than willing to help get that information out to the community, especially they have programs that, health programs, growing fresh vegetables, and we have a lot of land out here in the village that they can, you know, use to grow their gardens.
Mm-hmm. I had this conversation actually recently with a young lady with the 4-H program who was saying the exact same thing down in Texas and in Louisiana, that many African-American students aren't aware that there is a very large need for, they're actually, you know, openly soliciting African Americans to go into, and they're paying for, you know, their education in, you know, on the university level and even assisting them with job placement and this kind of thing, because it's absolutely, a program that, if I'm not mistaken, and I don't want to misquote her, but I believe that she said that this program originally was spearheaded by an African, you know, it was a statewide African American club from its inception in the 1930s.
Oh, okay. Well, I haven't had it. She just gave me her card, and she told me she would have information to present to myself and Ms. Williams, because it will be run through the library, and since Ms. Williams is one of the librarians there, she can definitely keep an eye on it more than me as a board member. Not that I wouldn't be there, but the children that come in and the adults that they will be able to benefit from the program, it was good to have a librarian, you know, help and co-sponsor this.
Right.
Right. And that's great. Appreciate that. Because we do need more activity, especially with Forest, since it was made for us because of the discrimination with the FHA and that sort of thing. I think that's what you, the research you, that you, that person shared with you, Jonathan.
Right.
And so, you know, we need to get bring back all of the activities and attention to especially library services. We also have the Occupy the Library movement. We did a program where we featured many authors in our network some months ago. Mm-hmm. And what we really wanted to do with that movement was to get our respective communities to not only be aware of the services and the activities the library hold, but to share and post information so that we can really, as a community, make the library one of the focal points of our neighborhoods, not just to go in and use the internet as it has become in recent times,
mm-hmm.
but take advantage and benefit and contribute to its functioning and its growth.
Right.
Right.
Yes, and that was one of the main reasons, as I said, we wanted to have our own library in our community that our children could walk to, and even the seniors could, if they felt up to it, they could walk to the library and use the facilities.
Right, right, right. And we thank you for joining us tonight, and we would like you to continue to keep us updated and share with us, I guess, when the next 6 month meeting is, so you can feature your authors and so forth. And we'll be glad to, you know, share with our audience and talk about this at length.
I certainly will.
And will those biannual meetings be at your facility?
Ooh, we haven't decided that yet.
Okay.
We're still working out some of the details.
Okay. But it was a major announcement. It was something that I'm certain that many of the authors and patrons were, you know, extremely excited to hear. And so I just wanted to get in as much information as we could about it. I didn't want to put you on the spot.
Right.
Well, no, that's no problem. The mayor said we would, you know, try to do this twice a year, and we did this for Black History Month, and there's a major fest that happens in the Village of Phoenix in the first weekend in August. So I would try to have something maybe in September and October, but I'll have to work that out.
Right. Right. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much. You can hang on a minute. We're going to keep your line open so that you can interject, and you will have an opportunity to give any final comments that you, you know, would like to before this particular broadcast is over.
Okay.
But next we have Brother Lunzel, who is the third distinguished author. Well, actually, he's the second. Sister Elizabeth, have you written?
Mm-hmm.
You have written a work?
No. I'm on the library board, and I'm also a village trustee out here also. And no, I haven't written anything, and I had the authors laugh, and they said, "Well, what are you thinking about doing?" Because I recently retired. I said, "I don't know, because I'm doing things at the library and the village, and I was like, I don't know. I hadn't thought about a hobby or anything else I could do right now. I got to, you know, make sure the library has its programs up and running and running smoothly." And I said, "Shoot, I have no idea."
Oh,
and
wow.
I mean, it's sad, but it isn't, because I'm busy doing something else.
Well, that's okay. I didn't want to overlook anything. That's all.
No, you didn't.
Now we have Brother Cross, who is on the line with us. He's a father who decided it was time to get off the sidelines and start getting involved in the game of education. After reading countless books to his 5-year-old daughter, Lonnie, he decided he could write a better book 18 months later. Another Alphabet Book Daddy was born. A native of Chicago, Cross holds his Illinois barber's license and Illinois real estate broker's license. He's involved in real estate investing, songwriting, and various aspects of telecommunication. Brother Cross, we are absolutely delighted to have you join us tonight, and welcome.
Welcome. Be a part of the radio show, and I'm very pleased to be on a panel with such distinguished guests as well. So thank you all for the honor of inviting me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. We're glad to have you. Please share with us how you began the process of becoming a an author, and how that worked with you being from the Chicago area, also Village of Phoenix area. If so, how did y'all work together to feature your work?
Absolutely. Okay. I guess this all started. I watched a movie, Limitless, with Bradley Cooper. Have you guys Are you guys familiar with that movie? So I don't want to
Limitless,
but Limitless.
No.
Phenomenal movie. So Bradley Cooper takes a pill to access 100% of his brain activity. Phenomenal movie. So I watched the movie and I felt like a slacker. So I already do a lot, but I'm like, wow, what more could I be doing? You know, I could be doing something else with my time. So after reading all of these books to my daughter, I read a book shortly after watching the movie, and I decided, hey, I could write a better book than this. So I put her to bed and went to work on, you know, writing a book that was a better book than the books that I had been reading to her, that they were missing some of the elements that I believe that I was able to capture in my book, which is, it's fun, interactive, engaging, and I utilize real words. So, you know, they have real-world application of everything that I put in the book, as opposed to other books that use words that children can't relate to, nor do they have an actual meaning in the real world. So I found my daughter asking me questions like, Daddy, what is that? And I'm like, oh, gee, Lonnie, that's a great question. That's actually something that came from the imagination of the author. Mm-hmm. So I decided, hey, why don't I write a book that gives her real-world applications and can really help her? So I decided to write the book, and then the tough part was finding a company to publish it and whether to send it off to these various publishing houses and let them determine whether my book is worthy of being published. And I decided to go the route of independently publishing my own work. And,
all right.
Yeah, here I am. The book is available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and a slew of other websites. And it took, again, as was already said by Joe Levitt, it took about 18 months. I couldn't be more pleased, and the daycares that I go to, elementary schools that I visit, and I do book readings and things of that nature, the teachers find it a phenomenal tool to help their children learn how to, better read and have a better grasp on the English language. The children are always engaged. So every other page, I pose a question: can you think of any other words that begin with the letters A or B, C or D? You know, so I kind of tie two letters together. The book is full of rhyme patterns, alliteration, and it's a fun book. And I was able to test it out on my daughter, and if she didn't like it, I knew the book wouldn't fly. But because I got her blessing, other kids really gravitate to it. I've actually had some I've gone to some fairs in the Chicagoland area, and a couple of brothers actually purchased my book to take over to the motherland to help mm-hmm. teach English. And mm-hmm. I was honored by that. I was like, wow, okay. He was like, this book is a phenomenal learning tool. I can help teach English. I was like, wow, okay, here we go. So it's taken on legs of its own. You know, it's a life of its own. It's really expanded way beyond, my concept of what I wanted to do with the book. It was really just about writing a book that my daughter could enjoy. Then I was like, well, and if my daughter can enjoy it, why not other children? And, it has nothing to do with race, color, creed, religion. Each letter is tied to an animal that mm-hmm. identifies with that letter. And it's just really a great tool. Now, my tie to Phoenix, If I could do a quick correction. So Mayor Wells of Phoenix was actually my high school football and track coach. So that kind of smashes the stereotype that athletes can't read and aren't into academia. So here I am, a former football track, track runner, writing books. And it's just really phenomenal, just really thinking about my legacy and what I would leave behind when I'm no longer here. I couldn't think of a better gift to leave the world than the gift of learning.
Wow.
Wow, it is. It's phenomenal. Very inspirational. Because most of us do not think of feeling that need, like we've seen the literary material being subpar and saying, you know what's missing because your child is asking you the questions and you're like, hey, if a writer had done a better job, I wouldn't have to be answering all these questions.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so by using all the literary device, you're able to craft an excellent body of work that would be taken around the world, literally.
Yes, and the book is also available in Kindle format as well. So for those that are the new age kids and new age parents that are like, well, my kids don't really like physical books, hey, the Kindle version is available to download.
What do you think about that? What is your opinion, if you don't mind my asking? And I'd also like to ask Sister Elizabeth about that, this new, technology, and what I can only assume will be tantamount to, the library becoming almost obsolete.
Absolutely. It's definitely an unfortunate thing, but, doing some research, I noticed that more books were being sold on Amazon.com in the digital format than physical books.
Really?
Which is amazing. So a lot of people are, purchasing Nooks and iPads and tablets and things of that nature, downloading these applications and downloading books. And it doesn't feel the same to me. I'm old school. I'm a
70s. I agree with you.
It's nice to
hold a book in your hand when you're actually reading it. I mean, it's nice to be able to flip through on a computer, but to actually look at a book, and sometimes some of the information that you can get off of the computer is incorrect. You still need to go back to a book to correct that, because we still have a set of encyclopedias at the library, both sides, the public and the school side. So some of the things that come up on Wikipedia are incorrect. The children still have to go back to a hardcover encyclopedia to look at, and the library is going to have to develop a whole host of programs to bring people in, other than just to look at the internet to download something on their zip drive. So that's why we're trying to develop after school programs, knitting programs, adult literacy, is that we can roll out to the community so they can come into the library. And once we get them in there, maybe, we can say, well, did you see the autobiography of Rosa Parks? Have you read that lately? Oh, I can't get that on Kindle. Well, there's the book right there. You can check it out.
Right.
There's a lot of things you can't get on Kindle because we have – then I'm going to stop talking. We were looking for Force the Glory about Abraham Lincoln. Lerone Bennett wrote that book. And we went around to the libraries. That book has become a reference book. You couldn't buy it on Kindle. You could only read it in the libraries. So you still need libraries to actually go and look at a physical book, a physical magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because the digitized book costs money. Force of Glory is well over 500 pages.
Yes.
And going to pay for that. Johnson Publishing probably doesn't feel like doing that right now. And even if it were, the journey of looking through the book, and I mean, I know you can make notes on the Kindle. I have a Nook. I'm guilty. I can say it was a gift.
It was. Because even the smell, I don't know if I'm getting corny, but just the smell and the feel of the book. Is, can't replace that. I don't. I just don't get that.
I agree with you. I don't get that from
screen.
That old,
and, you know.
Yeah, from that screen. I don't get that from a screen.
No.
Right. And then the files are, you know, I know we can get off into the, you know, the argument of digital versus, you know, paper. Human beings have been writing on using styluses to inscribe their ideas, using symbols onto parchment or stone, you know, for the last, you know, for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's right.
We don't really know how long, but we know for forever.
Right.
And this new thing where we're going to put it on some electronic device, well, we know that's a little bit disempowering, I would say, because you have to subscribe to all these services and need to access it. You have to have the electricity, or you have to
mm-hmm.
have something that you don't control. But once you buy the book is yours. You have to subscribe to anything.
And you can go outside. Mm-hmm. And you go outside on a bright, sunshiny day and sit down under a tree or something and read a book.
That's right. You can read the book as long as the pages stay in the book.
There you go.
All right. Well, we're running out of time, and I want everybody to have an opportunity to finish up with, you know, any closing remarks that they'd like to have before we get out of here. So is it anything that anyone would like to add?
Then,
go ahead.
All I wanted to say is the Phoenix Public Library, we want to serve lifelong learners, because that is something we need to express, that we are living longer, and just because we don't sit in a classroom doesn't mean we can't learn something new. And that is definitely the goal of the Phoenix Public Library.
Wonderful. Thank you for that information. And Brother Lunzel, is there anything that you'd like to share before we go?
Absolutely. First of all, I would like to thank you all for giving us the opportunity to share, you know, what we are able to offer the world on your station. We definitely appreciate the opportunity. Thank you guys for your kindness. We definitely appreciate that as well. I just would like to let everyone know that my book is titled Another Alphabet Book Daddy. Introducing children to sarcasm a little early, as if there aren't enough alphabet books already. So Another Alphabet Book Daddy is available on, as I said before, Amazon.com, as well as BarnesandNoble.com, as well as paperback and Kindle format. So thank you guys again. I just wanted to do a shameless plug like
thank
Diddy.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. And we will also share your links. I've shared it in the chat room for this particular broadcast, but I'll also share it on the walls of our community pages and our various networks. I've shared it on our Occupy a Library page as well. So hopefully you will see. As a matter of fact, on my personal page, I saw someone that was very happy to see your book, and I think they bought it. So hopefully we'll see more people showing interest in our authors and scholars and your illustrious efforts to enlighten our community. All right, so Brother Ali, you are our tail gunner.
Okay, can you guys hear me?
Sure can.
Okay. Well, again.
Hello? No. Okay, his line is out. It's his phone has been dropping a little bit tonight. But
there we go.
Okay.
Is that better? Okay.
Yeah.
Again, I wanted to thank both Charles and Jennifer. You all are amazing, and I really appreciate how you are able to connect people and bring them to new audiences and expose people to new things to which they haven't had the experience to hear and learn about. It's a very important work that you do, and I wanted to say thank you for. And I really appreciate you at the drop of a hat stopping what you guys are doing to let us come and talk about what happened and what we're planning on doing. And I wanted to say thank you to the Village of Phoenix and to the Barack Obama Library and to all the folks who really kind of made it happen at the library, as well as the two other authors. I just thank you guys. I really appreciate it.
All right. Wonderful. All right. That is all the time that we have. So, Charles, we're out of here.
Yeah, yes, we are here. When we'll be back, we'll continue to discuss Nat Turner, insurrection, and I think the discussion for our next feature was The title I cannot recall.
We'll share it on the event page. We gotta go.
Y'all know what you're talking about.
Hey, thank you so much for being with us tonight. We'll see you next week.
If we
at our usual time, Wednesday night, 10 p.m. Good night.
Right. Good night.